I'm Dean Newland, and welcome to the Business of Intuition, where I coach, facilitate, train, and speak on the hard science and meaningful experience of intuitive leadership in business, so you can make better decisions, forge real connections, and creatively solve problems to amplify your impact and simplify your life. Welcome to the Business of Intuition.
So every industry has its giants. And my next guest, Susan Klein, is the giant in the industry of coaching. And that's not hyperbole. Susan was my first coach 26 years ago. As I understand it, and tell me if I'm right, Susan, you were instrumental in starting Coach University, the International Coach Federation, the Conversation Among Masters, which is sort of a spinoff of ICF. You are part of what really we now know as coaching. You are still working with ICF on ethics and standards, and you probably have coached others to be coaches, I would say, in the hundreds. Fair enough?
Well, yes, thank you. That's a lovely introduction.
Well, I really mean it from the heart. You've had such a huge effect on me, and by virtue of your influence on me, you've touched hundreds and thousands of people that you probably have never met just through the work that you've done. So it's really great to have you on this podcast.
Yeah, and that's the whole point, isn't it, of coaching? When we make a difference with one person, that person will make a difference with other people, who will make a difference with other people, and will change the world.
Yes, exactly. Well, when it comes to intuition, Susan, I guess what I wanted to find out is, do you need to be, in your estimation, pretty good at being intuitive in order to be a good coach? Is it hand in foot, hand in glove, I should say?
Yeah. I think that at least 50% of coaching, when we talk about the art and science of coaching, right? So we get the science and we learn the tools and we practice the tools, but the art of coaching brings in the other things that may not be as learnable, but can be accessed, you know, if we work at it. So yes, to answer your question, at least 50% of coaching is intuition.
So you mentioned the science of coaching, that there's a process, there's a step-by-step. And I know in the process that you and I have worked on together, when we have partnered on providing coaching training for some large organizations, you know, we've got a lot of things having to do with asking open-ended questions and really getting to a process to have people really describe and tell their story. And so there's a certain kind of mechanical piece of this, you know, where you're asking a lot of things to kind of uncover stuff. But at what point do you think the coach taps into that intuition? When do they start feeling and sensing the pattern? Can it happen at the beginning of a session? Does it happen after they've asked all these questions? You know, when does that light bulb go on, or at least for you?
I think for an experienced coach, Dane, it happens with hello. You know, because, you know, when we look at what's the root of intuition for a coach, it's in listening. And from the very beginning of a conversation, from the very first time we speak with someone, we're tuning into our listening skills. And in part of that listening skills is just sensing who this person is and who they're being. Even before, as you mentioned, the patterns, we listen for the patterns, we listen for the themes. But even before we get to the patterns and themes, we're sensing things about the other person. And we sense them in our listening, and we can sense them in our physicalness as well, in our bodies. But I think it really does start with hello.
That's great, because our mind is so fast and so quick. And I heard recently somebody say that we have 60 to 70,000 thoughts a day. Probably 90% of them are the same thoughts we had the day before. And so we have these ultra fast, extremely quick, computer-like brains. What do you do to quiet it down so you can listen?
Wow, you know, that's the challenge, isn't it? I think it's the challenge for every coach, newer coaches as well as more mature coaches. It really takes practice. I talk about it as going to the listening gym. And, you know, we can't expect ourselves to be great listeners without a lot of practice. And being aware of our thoughts and our chatter is the beginning of the practice. And just starting to be aware of what's going on right now. While I'm talking with you, I'm thinking of things. So it's not even you talking to me that my chatter starts, but even when I'm talking to you, my chatter starts. So it's being aware of it. And then as one is aware of it, one needs to put it aside. It's a little like meditating. You know, when you start meditating and try to calm and quiet your mind, you're aware of all the thoughts. And it's like, okay, I'm letting go of that thought now and coming back to whatever it is I'm doing, breathing or saying a mantra. And then another thought comes up. And so I'm aware of that and let it go of that. So it's a real conscious effort. And it's like going to the listening gym. You begin to go to the gym for the very first time to work out your body. You don't start with 50-pound weights. You know, you might start with 5-pound weights and then get more and more practice. You can get better and better. And it's the same thing in the listening gym. You start just by being aware and then just like letting it go and coming back and letting go and coming back till finally those periods of letting it go a little bit longer. And I also prepare, like before an actual coaching session, I do prepare myself. I do minimize all distractions and interruptions. I gather my thoughts. I look to see if anything's going on with me that I need to write down so that I don't have to think about it. All of those things in terms of preparing to be there for somebody else.
Mm. So in that preparation, do you set, using a little bit of coaching lingo here, an intention for the coaching session?
Well, it depends upon what you mean by set an intention, I think. So I'm going to ask you, what do you mean by set an intention?
Do you give your mind and your presence something to focus on? How do I say this without sounding too jargonistic, but do you ask yourself, how do I want this coaching session to go? And then come up with an answer, or how do I want to be in this conversation? Because maybe I am coming off of a difficult conversation with somebody else or a family member, or what have you. Is there a goal that you establish prior to the coaching session that helps get you into that present moment where your listening can really take off?
Yeah. And it isn't about a goal in terms of what wants to be accomplished, because that's up to the client. But I do set an intention to be present. I do set that intention. So it's almost like, let me be present. Let me be fully present for this person.
Yeah.
Because, you know, sometimes, and I know it's your experience too, Dean, sometimes our clients just want a safe space to be able to think out loud, to be able to process, to be able to express themselves. And in order to do that, they need to know that they have a vessel of somebody listening, truly listening to them without judgments, without expectations, you know, just being there for someone.
Yeah. I was just doing a session last week with a company down in Phoenix, and we did a listening exercise. What was so profound with what somebody said about the experience was I really felt that they saw me. I really felt seen. And another way of saying it, really felt heard. And
heard.
Is that
gotten.
Gotten, all those other words.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you and I have discussed this before, but you know, when we start off a coaching engagement, sometimes I have, and I'm sure you have too, people say, well, I would really like to do face-to-face. How does having a face-to-face conversation either aid or get in the way of your ability to listen?
Well, you and I were both trained on the phone, right?
Right.
I spent 4 years in training on the phone in coaching, and I know you did too through the program that we worked together. And I often find it distracting to be in front of someone. Now, that said, I want to qualify that a little bit because I find it useful to perhaps our first coaching session. If we're not in person, we're on FaceTime or we're on Skype or Zoom or something where I can get a sense of this person's being, physical being, how they're responding to me facially, and they feel more of an instant trust. I've noticed as I, particularly with coaching upper level people, physician leaders, you know, high level executives, that trust is really important. And for some reason, they feel more trusting once they can see me. It must be my trusting face or something like that, right? But after that, I find it distracting, just my personal self, to be in front of people. Because when I listen, my eyes go, I kind of blurry, you know, I just don't focus on anything. And it gives me a fuller experience of listening. When I'm in front of someone, I'm distracted by something they do or a look or you know, what they're wearing, things like that. So in terms of listening, in terms of being present, for me, it works better.
Mm, I agree.
To be, you know, yeah.
I sometimes describe this as being in a confessional. You know, you go into the booth, you really can't see the priest or the minister, but you're giving them your story. And there's a quiet space where you can just tell your story in private that somebody can hear. And sometimes we get very good trust that can come from that situation where we're not being distracted by the visual. On the other side, do you find that when you're listening to somebody over the phone and your intuition is in full bloom, when a person is checking out or distracted, not that you hear all of a sudden their keys being clicked and they're obviously responding to email, but can you sense when they're not there anymore, even if you have no visual clues to tell you that?
Oh, sure. For the most part, you sense it in their energy, in their engagement, in their breathing even. Mm. Yeah.
I get it. Yeah. So another kind of question I wanted to ask you about, you know, you and I have worked with some very analytical, data-based individuals, engineers, mm-hmm. doctors, lawyers, the epitome of the data-based thinking paradigm that we are so mm-hmm. much in these days. How do you share an impression that is obviously intuitive, that is not based on something they said that's factual? How do you share intuition to a non-intuitive?
Mm-hmm. I think what's important is the context. So initially, I may say, please feel free to disagree with me or edit anything I have to say. So I want them to feel that I'm not trying to push them into something or put something onto them, but giving them full permission to realize what I'm going to say is something that is coming. And I do qualify that as well. I want to share an intuition. I have an observation. And then I say it directly and with whatever empathy is required, if that's what's required at the moment. You know, but really putting some context in first, so I'm not just laying something on them, but I want to share an intuition. I have an observation. Please feel free to disagree with me, but try it on.
And how they respond?
Usually pretty well.
Yeah.
I mean, occasionally somebody says no, you know, but what's the worst thing can happen? Somebody says no. Okay, it's not about me. It's about them. At least I've introduced the idea, and who knows? Maybe it's just planting a seed that needs to be planted. And gets watered later on, or an idea that percolates and gets brought up later on. You know, we don't have to have their full agreement all the time.
Right. And sometimes when I give people what I might call my intuitive hit on something, and I give the preface that I might be barking up the wrong tree, sometimes I'll say, you're absolutely right. You're wrong on that. That's not exactly what it is. I think that is so off base there, Dean. You're not even close.
Yeah.
But because you've given me that context, I'm a lot closer to what it is. And so in some ways you win anyway, because you're either directed right to the truth and you found that you've uncovered what has been hidden, or they go, no, that's not it. But boy, you got me thinking. It's probably over here. So now we go in that direction. We get a little bit closer to the truth. And so either way, I kind of feel like these comments we give to our clients, even if they're not always accurate, they sometimes get us closer to what is accurate.
Yeah, and you've introduced another word here, truth. And I think that's important too, because when we're using intuition and we share it, we're sharing an intuition. We're not sharing the immutable truth. Mm. You know, it's what we sense. Our truth may not be the client's truth.
Yes, right. Very good. Do you have a client or a story brief one that comes to mind that you always can recall about this coaching engagement, this conversation I had, just was fantastic. I mean, I still think about it today. Do you have any short little story you might be able to share with us that might even include this notion about being able to tap into your listening and your intuition? I got you.
I wasn't prepared for that. yeah. Well, you know,
these are unscripted conversations, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, I love these. I love these conversations. I'll share something that happened yesterday.
Oh, good. Awesome.
So I began a coaching session with a brand new client. It was their first time speaking, and it was on FaceTime. Okay, because this particular client wasn't technologically efficient yet. So they requested FaceTime instead of Zoom or Skype or something like that. And what I had been told about this person is that they were not happy about being coached. It was something that was requested from their boss. I don't want to give too much information away here yet. And that they were not happy about it, but that they were willing. So right away, I'm thinking somebody's not happy about it, but willing. Now, what is this going to be like? You know, I'm already thinking, I don't even know if this is going to be a successful engagement. I don't even know if I want to. All those things, because I don't want to work with someone who doesn't absolutely want and crave to make changes. And so I went in a little bit apprehensively. That was how, and I was very much aware that I was apprehensive, and I had to make a conscious choice that I was going to listen completely as open-minded as I could be. That I made that conscious choice. So we started the conversation on FaceTime, and I, you know, introduced myself, what coaching was. I asked him, you know, what he had heard about it. And within 5 minutes, literally within 5 minutes, he was eager to be coached. He was looking forward to the engagement. He was excited about what we just in 5 minutes had talked about. And so
what happened in that 5 minutes? Because that kind of quality conversation anybody can do, whether they are a coach or not.
Yeah.
What took place in that 5 minutes that turned him around?
Here's what I think. I think, first of all, he heard me say that it was strictly confidential. I was not going to repeat anything so that he could trust me, right? Mm. And that I was committed to his success. And he asked me, well, are we going to at least talk about my goal? And I asked him what his goal was. And I said, absolutely. It completely aligns with the goal of your organization. And he got, like, he lit up, completely lit up. And he went, oh, great, let's go. That kind of thing. But the description that I had been given was of somebody who was possibly going to be resistant. Mm. And so here's on my side, what was going on for me is I was watching him, I was listening to his voice, and I was strongly feeling an intuition that he, if we could just get a couple of things out of the way, was going to be great. And he was. Right. I mean, I love the guy.
So it sounds like in your conversation with your intuition, with your listening, you were able to shift, change his opinion about you and about coaching, about the process. You may have helped him take on a different perception. Fair enough.
Yeah, I don't think it had been clearly explained to him, because oftentimes when it's requested by a boss, they look at it as punitive.
Right.
And when I assured him it wasn't punitive, it really was a privilege that they thought highly enough of him to spend the money.
Yes. So and then he felt safe to be able to partner with you.
Yeah. 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 It's great.
In this listening/intuition conversation that we're having, there's a lot of evidence about people getting wrapped up into the pace of their life and thinking more about the future and regretting the past. Our technology is becoming so ubiquitous that it's screaming for attention like a crying baby all the time. And getting in the present, getting into the now is almost a thing that we relegate towards a vacation somewhere that we hope we can experience that. One of the things I wonder from your perspective is, do you think that people today fear being present, fear being intuitive? And if so, you know, what's that about? What do you think?
I think people just have a hard time being present. I think there's so much chatter going on about what just happened in the past, because what just happened is the past, and what's going to happen next in the future, that they're not present. I don't know that they're afraid to be. What I do think is that our clients, your clients and my clients, who really want coaching, value that time together where they can just be present and look forward to having a time in their day where they can just be who they are and be present. I think people have a really hard time being present. When you look at where most of the thoughts are, really, I just came out of a meeting and now I'm processing that meeting and I'm processing, how did that go? Did I do what I wanted? What was I asked for? And then how am I going to deliver that? And when am I going to work on it? And so now my mind went from the past to the future and none of it is about right this minute.
Yeah. There's something you're saying that makes me think about, you know, on one hand, being present is delicious. I mean, it's where every piece of our memory of what is good in our life stems from. It's that wonderful first date. It's the moment our child was born. It's that hike in the woods that we keep remembering. All those experiences add up to a quality life. And of course, when presence is like that and there's safety involved, I think there's just so much ultimate bliss that comes from that. And then on the other side, my sense is that people resist being present because then they have to be accountable. They have to know how they really feel, and that being distracted is an avoidance to something that they're trying to hide or not wanting to deal with. Do you sense that? Do you get that in your coaching?
Oh, spot on. Absolutely. I think you're spot on, Dean. Definitely, people would have to be accountable for their actions and their beliefs and their history and all that. You know, as you were describing the different instances that were so delicious and when you were present, it all stemmed for me in gratitude. And gratitude is something that happens in the present. We can only be grateful at the moment. Even thinking about something that was wonderful in the moment, we're being grateful for it.
Yes.
And so I think that ties in to the ability to be present. So yeah, I think you're spot on. I think that that goes on a lot for people. And the distractions, the amount of distractions we have. You know, when we think about a simpler time, when I first started coaching, we didn't use computers. We really didn't use computers much.
Right.
We used fax machines, you know.
What's a fax
and
machine?
Telephone. Yeah, right. We didn't use computers. So we didn't have the number of distractions, the level of distractions that we have now that help us. Of course, all our technology helps us, but it also, we're not wired that way. Our DNA is not wired that way. So we're always trying to catch up. We always feel behind. You talk to your clients and they're almost always overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Nobody can ever catch up. We're just not wired for the amount of stuff coming at us. So actually that's taken us away a little bit from an intuition, but I think it all ties in, yeah?
Absolutely. I think that that's one of the barriers of intuition is this fast-paced, database, obsessive pattern and habit we have towards not being present. And we don't even know what it feels like. There's almost like there's withdrawals when we find ourselves in the present moment. I was just coming off of a week-long vacation down in Mexico, and I took my phone and threw it into the little hotel safe. And there were times in the pool and the walking on the beach that there was nothing to do. There was nothing to think about. And I was anxious. It took me a little bit of time. It's like, wait a minute, what am I? I have no goal. I have no focus. Is it the pool? Is it the beach? We're going to go take a nap. You know, like, that's not big enough. That's not, you know, I had all this sort of stuff get in my way. And then eventually I was able just to make the vacation more about a meditation than it was about having to do something. It was more just about being. I had to unlearn to be frenetic. And I guess what I'm wondering in your perspective, and I'm sort of leading the witness a little bit, I realize, but coaching is a process to help guide people back to themselves, back to the present, so that they're able to identify and achieve future goals. But we have to pass through that way station. We have to get them here in order to get them there. What do you
think?
And
get ourselves here. As you said, I'm the same way. It takes me a good 3 days.
Yeah.
Of not being connected to just being able to be. I'm similarly wondering, you know, what's going on with my phone? You know, where is it and what's going on with it? Yeah, it takes me a good 3 days. If we need to do that for ourselves, if we're going to assist others.
Exactly. That phone analogy makes me remember an article I read out of the Wall Street Journal a few months ago where they were doing studies about the effects of phone on empathy and learning. And they said that basically you become less empathetic when your phone is even turned off, but within sight. And when you do studies with kids and adults and they go into a classroom and they're doing tests, those that had their phones even off but within sight had a full letter grade lower than those that couldn't see their phones. Like, and now that's become just part of every conversation I have with people in facilitation. So it's like, here's the studies. I'm not just making this stuff up. If we really want to have a productive meeting, all your phones need to be turned off and out of sight. And the people go, okay. You know, so it works, but it's hard and they have to be strong enough to be able to let go of that dependence.
Well, that's fascinating. Do you have a copy of that?
I do. I'll find it and I'll send it to you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, you
Thank
bet.
You.
So, Susan, you've been truly an industry leader in coaching. I really believe that. And I'm so appreciative of what you've done for me and what you have done for so many people. And you've got the benefit of history is your awareness. You've seen the industry go from literally, what is coaching? Is that something having to do with sports? To now it being taught at Harvard University. And we have coaches almost everywhere, as ubiquitous as
in
Starbucks.
In every country.
In every country.
In every country.
Land. Yeah. I mean, coaching is not a fad. Coaching is a part of our self-help movement and business practice. Given the history that you see, if you look forward into the next, say, 10 years, they say that the speed of change right now is the slowest it's going to be for the rest of our lives. And if that's true, we've got a lot more coming with technology, with all sorts of social changes, with employees wanting and needing more. What do you see for the next 10 years for coaching as a practice? Do you have any sense of that, any vision around in 2020 or the 2030, I should say, you're going to see coaching looking more like this? Do you have any feeling for that?
Yeah, this is a conversation that we coaches have all the time that we engage in, because there's a lot of people being trained in the training schools, in the universities. Oh my goodness, you know, I currently teach at 3 universities. So a lot of people are going through these programs, not only to enhance their skills with whatever they're doing in their profession, but to actually create coaching businesses. I don't know if it's in the next 10 years, but it will happen that artificial intelligence will play a big part in coaching. And I don't know what that's going to look like. I really don't. But if you listen to all these experts, quote unquote, they're saying artificial intelligence is coming.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's not in the next 5 years, but, you know, it could be in the next 10 years, given what's happening with technology and the digital world. I don't know what that will look like. I really don't. But I suspect that people really need and want that personal connection. They want to be heard. They want to be understood. They want empathy. They want compassion. They want connection. I don't know about artificial intelligence. Will that provide it? I don't know.
Yeah. I just finished reading Dan Brown's book, the new one called Origins. And I won't be a spoiler alert, but it talks about this very topic around, I'll just simply say this, that artificial intelligence, it plays a role in the book and it becomes one of the major characters, if you will. When I was at a conference that you are very familiar with called CAM, Conversation Among Masters, which for those of you who are listening in, this is a group of coaches who have been in the business for quite some time, have really gotten quite good at what they do, and they get together once a year to network, but support one another and get some great training and interaction around, you know, where coaching is going. And it's a way for all of us to sharpen our saw, so to speak. And so the last one that I was at had to do in part with a conversation that we were able to get involved in around this very topic. Some of the things that came out around artificial intelligence and how it might influence or be a part of coaching had to do with really a way of collecting and having all of this background data on your client, all within a fingertips approach. You would have your Myers-Briggs, your True Colors, your Hogan, you know, your social agility assessment. You'd have all of this assessment information all pulled together. And then you may also have a Fitbit or other kind of a watch that might start to monitor your glucose levels or your serotonin levels or your your heart rate, and all of these things coming together so that the coach now has all this information that they wouldn't have to take a lot of time to get to, but would be more accessible. So we can get on to the real business of the conversation. You know, it'd be just there in the background. That's one thought that came out. I do wonder if we start to end up having actual relationships with our series, so to speak. You know, there's some pretty creepy movies out there where, you know, the future looks a little weird and strange. But I think your point is so well taken that what it is to be human is that intimacy, is that interpersonal connection that I am not alone. I am being heard. I am being listened to. You've created a safe space for that. And I think that what you do, Susan, so well, and what coaches do when they're good at what they do, is be the example of what all humans want, is that kind of interpersonal connection, is that bond.
Now I'm intrigued. Now I got to go read the book.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time on this, and you know, look forward to more discussions on this topic.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having this conversation. Now I feel so much more alive and just being able to brainstorm and think about these things and speak about them out loud. It's very exciting.
Well, thank you, Susan,
for that opportunity.
You bet.
Thank you for listening to The Business of Intuition. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about Dean or Mission Facilitators Leadership, go to mfileadership.com. That's mfileadership.com.